Coffee Sketch Podcast is our take on the intersection of old tech and new tech, the space between the traditional practice of the hand-drawn sketch that has been performed by architects and designers for centuries, and the modern-day use of the hashtag as a representation of a sentiment or a movement. Each week we plan to deliver a new pod about our ideas, sketches, and what's going on in our daily lives as we pursue our love of architecture, design, and sharing this knowledge with the next generation. I'm Kurt, and I'm in Flint.
And I'm Jamie, and I'm in Austin.
Hey, Jamie. How are you?
Good morning, Kurt. How are you doing?
Well, I have this sore knuckle.
from your countdown?
Yeah, I was just trying to count down, and even in podcasting, you can pull an injury.
Yeah, we are gonna talk a little bit about sports today.
Yeah, so. I'm physically active podcaster that has suffered. It's for my first injury in three seasons. So
that's not bad.
So yeah, No, there was no, what do you call it, rookie or sophomore curse.
Yeah, no sophomore slump. So we're good.
Waited till year three. But I noticed that some goodies arrived on your end. As promised, just the timeline was not clearly defined, but I'm glad you received some of the sweet gifts that Flint has to offer.
Well,
so
describe what you got. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, for the people who have actually been following this saga of like the care packages, and we've done some care packages in the past, but this one was like had a really good buildup, and so I was kind of excited and kind of wasn't sure, you know, what it was going to be, and then got the box, and wow, you definitely y'all outdid yourselves. This was pretty sweet.
I bet so when you got the box, though, you were like, what?
Yeah,
I like to reuse the packages, you know, because Dee and I are trying to reduce our waste, right? So it was like a garden hose.
Yeah, I was like, oh, this is perfect. Well, and it's good because, you know, it had to sit on the porch for, you know, for a little bit. So I think people were like, I don't want a garden hose, you know? So
yeah, stealth.
Stealth. It's sort of, you know, stealth packaging. But no, so I got a very, very nice scarf of the Flint City Bucks soccer franchise. Supporter wear. Very, very nice. So, and as you were telling me, they're all already off to another good season.
Yeah, I saw an article that I think they're as of a few days ago, at least, they're still undefeated, and so working their way through USL League Two.
That's right.
Tier.
That's right. And this was like another like, you know, beautiful surprise, and I want to know a little bit more about this group that is represented here, because as you can see, it's a well-used aerosol can for aerosol art, and signed and tagged, and I love it. And as you can see, I've got my gas mask across the way there.
Yeah. So, very cool.
The original logo of the Fallout Studio was a stylized gas mask. So it goes back in the day. But
the so that was the surprise that I mentioned in the last recording.
There was coffee. Oh, of course. Right. I mean, you know, this is a Coffee Sketch podcast, and there was coffee, and.
Yeah. Before we get into the special gift, are you drinking the dark?
I am.
The label.
Yeah. There is no X in espresso.
Oh, that's right. That's the one I got you. I have the other one. I have one. Okay. I have the one called Dark.
Okay.
Which is their dark blend. Which is so our friends at Rootless. I'm going to have to reach out to those guys and see if we can get some sponsorship.
Yeah, I mean, or at least the occasional occasional care package or something like that. I mean,
and so I got you, I thought it was cool. I picked up the No X in an espresso brew because I thought it would, I like it. And it has a cool logo too.
Me as a Canadian have trouble pronouncing things. And so you're like, this is perfect.
Like, yeah, it's a spelling lesson or a pronunciation lesson all in one.
Yeah, this is going to help Jamie out so much. So,
so what do you think? Any?
I really like it. I mean, I was surprised. I thought it was going to be like heavier, kind of a heavier flavor, but you know, it really is kind of a rich dark blend. But it's nice and smooth. I mean, like for such a dark roast, it's really nice and smooth. I really like it. I was, you know, really pleasantly surprised. And the label is pretty clever too. I did like that.
Yeah.
With the tagged X in there, it was kind of cool.
And I mean, we'll get into this for this episode. We're getting up to a little bit of little local, shout outs and representation, but I believe all their art is done by some local, either local artists or artists that have some, you know, sort of roots in the Flint area, some connection, you know, back to town here. So it's, you know, and each label is different. It's kind of fun. And so anyway, yeah, we continue the tradition of liking everything that Rootless has to make, but. So then
tell me more. Tell me more of the story of this.
So where I was to pick up all three, as an architect that shops infrequently, I like to do things in a very efficient manner. And so there's actually kind of a neat space downtown Flint that are called the Shops on Saginaw, and they're in the ground floor of the Dryden building. So an old building that was converted into office space, sort of, you know, repurposed. And the ground floor has these little booths or kiosks, kind of like pop-up retail. So it's sort of small, and each is a different vendor. So they have like a 10 by 10 sort of, you know, cubicle and display space. And then there's one common checkout space. So the Flint Public Art Project has a little booth. Flint Bucks have a little booth. And Rootless now has some space, counter space for their coffee. And so I was able to have a very nice, efficient. And then next door is Foster's Coffee, another local coffee shop. And I believe I picked up something for myself. Did a little shopping.
Got as home, one should do, you know.
And you know, went back to work. And then waited a few days and then eventually mailed. So as we've talked about Flint Public Art Project a few times, but my friend that runs it, Joe Scapani over there, has had for, I want to say 2 to 3 years now, has really ramped up their mural art program here in Flint. And, has gotten, you know, I think he's well over, let's see, at least 2 years, well over 100 murals a year, like around town, which is pretty astonishing, just like on its own, right? Just the coordination alone, right? But the cool part is he is attracting and inviting a lot of graffiti artists from all over, not just local, not just regional, not just even national. You know, I think quite a few come internationally from other parts of the world. And the other cool thing about Joe is that he is a bit of he wouldn't probably ascribe him, or how do I put it? He wouldn't declare himself a data junkie. However, he is modest in that sense, and he is actually tracking. So he has like a Google map with pins of all of the maps, of course, and then he also has, like, you know, we have all the information of who the artist is and where they're from. And actually, I should, if I haven't mentioned it before, the mural art and another connection to AIA is, so the mural art, he's been using this phone app called Pixel Sticks. And so if you don't have it, you should try and download it.
Okay.
You can tap on a map and pull up the public. It started from a company in Florida, St. Petersburg, who has a lot of mural art exhibits annually. And then Joe picked up on it and really has expanded the map for mural art in Flint on this app. And then I thought that was really interesting. And so what I did is for AIA Flint, we have a historic map guide to architecture that was always in a paper form. And right. I'd say 5 years ago, we, you know, I was the chair of the committee to sort of revamp the paper map, turned it into a new paper map, sort of, you know, redesigned, edited the list of buildings because some had unfortunately been demolished. But we also had some new buildings that we wanted to add to the guide. And so we've digitized the map guide and also loaded it onto this app, Pixel Sticks. And the guy, Matthew, that runs Pixel Sticks, or one of the guys down there in Florida, you know, never really thought about architecture as being like a market for him. Because it's primarily for public art. Outdoor murals mostly. And now he's got this extra, another avenue. And so let me see, I'll pull it up real quick. I know I'm probably digressing from what you thought I was going to say. I'll get to the spray can in a second, just because it'll make sense. But like, so we have here, so the P, that's for Pixel Sticks. And so if you, take your phone, it has these chips on the back. So if you tap your phone to the plaque, it'll bring up all the info. So if you actually wander or find your way through Flint,
okay.
See right. a plaque, you know, you see a plaque or see the P, tap your phone, and then it'll pull up some audiovisual content on the phone app. For more info about the artist, the building, for us, the building, for Joe, it would be the artist and maybe some of their other stuff.
So is there also a way to kind of see the whole map and sort of plan a trip or plan an outing?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Definitely. So you can see all the pins, like if you were Googling something for, you know, restaurants or something like that, but in right. this case, but then also what we did with the paper guide, and this is not to be a big commercial for AIA, but we tried to turn it into like these small walking tours and right. routes.
Yeah.
And so we're once I still have like a whole bunch of these plaques to get up around town, but once they're up, you can kind of go through the phone app and pull up a little route, like a small subset. And
well, it's like when you and I were doing the makes me think of the walking tours that we did for National in cities that we weren't actually working or living in. Sometimes you volunteer for things and it's, you know, you want to contribute and you're interested in going on the tour. But you know, when you're also in charge of developing the tour and then guiding people on the tour, and making all the digital materials. So yeah, Kurt and I did that in Chicago and Atlanta.
Yeah. I remember Atlanta and Chicago. Oh, but I remember that, you know, that was fun.
That was fun. I mean, it was a really good time, but, you know,
and they worked, I think they worked.
Yeah. I mean, well, I mean, there was like, you know, 50, 60 people like walking around with us. I mean, that was kind of crazy, but,
And we're like, we got to go that way.
Yeah. We're not from here, but, let's lead you on some architecture and have a good walk and talk with some friends, and but new friends.
Now with this sort of digital stuff, you know, we don't have to sort of mock these things up on paper. Right.
Right. I mean, I think the other part of it was even back then was, there was a recognition we probably could have done a digital, but that would have been like a whole lot of extra work for, especially for people who weren't even in the right city. That was a good little trip down memory lane. And then, you know, but I mean, tying it to these walking tours, I mean, especially this past year for folks, I mean, it's, you know, everybody in their communities, you know, we're really kind of trying to find ways to get creative about getting outside, you know, just sort of, you know, getting some fresh air, but also making it a little meaningful and exploring a little bit, even though we were all, you know, trying to be as careful and as close to home as possible. I think that, you know, that urban explorer, that you and I have talked about, you know, having a penchant for, I mean, that's, I'm excited to hear, you know, about that. And the fact that it comes from the public art project, I think makes a whole lot of sense to me. I mean, that's just, you know, that's a real natural connection. And I know that we've talked a lot about Flint public art, but it's, you know, and sort of how that program has, you know, slowly developed over time. But, I really want to hear more about, you know, I'm not trying to be selfish, maybe a little bit, but I do want to hear a little bit about, you know, the, the creators here.
So back to, so off of my digression, but back to, you know, my shopping trip. So one thing that is kind of a neat deal that that Flint Public Art Project's been putting in that shop is they have been getting the artists of the murals to sort of tag or customize the used spray paint cans that they've used to make the murals. And so they have a bunch of them on the shelf. And at first you're kind of like, what the heck is that? You know, if you're from afar, right, it looks like, you know, if from afar, it could look like a water bottle, right? With a sort of funky paint job. So then then I figured out what they were doing there. And because of what, you know, Joe also posts on his Instagram, like his stockpile of brand new paint, right? He's got a deal with somebody, you know, in the art, graffiti art world. And he's got massive amounts of paint kits. So it's like this thing, like, you know, the spray paint can has become this, you cannot sever that from Flint Public Art Project. So,
well, I mean, and the Instagram account for Flint Public Art, I mean, if no one's following it or checking it out, they definitely should, because, I've enjoyed it. And that was when I opened it up and saw this, it all sort of clicked in my mind. I was like, this is one of those artists. And I know that a lot of them are not from Flint. I mean, there are a lot of locals, and there are a lot of regional ones as well. But I know that they have been pulling people, you know, from different locations, and it's definitely one of those, like, you can definitely go down the rabbit hole seeing you know, whose art is attributed to whom, and then getting into their account, and then seeing where their murals have popped up, and kind of where they're based, and. People in London and all these different places.
So the one I got you is done by Nomad Clan. So that's the name of the group, of the artists. And they, I think particularly they have a really cool sort of tag or logo or identity, right? They have this sort of sketchy crown with the line. And then somewhere on there, I think it says Nomad Clan.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll usually add that, you know, in the very stylized lettering, you know, as part of their brand. And I actually can't remember where they are from, but they're not American. So they are, I think, from overseas somewhere. And I don't want to even try, because I would feel bad if I got it wrong. But I've seen, you know, when, you know, Joe is posting on Instagram some snapshots of the murals, either in progress or finished. And I think Nomad Clan has had some of the really most interesting and eye-catching murals here in Flint. And so I thought, you know, that with the way they decorated that can, I thought it would be a cool one to hang. You know, the one thing I was also concerned, I was like, well, you know, do I get something that maybe matches Jamie's decor, or do I just kind of like go with my gut and pick something that I I like as an object on its own, right?
No, I'm very appreciative. I mean, it's very thoughtful and I love it. You know, and I think that, you know, what's funny is, you know, when I saw the stylized crown, my first thought was Basquiat. It kind of has that sort of feel to it. But anyhow, love it. Thank you. Wonderful care package. I do definitely appreciate it. You know, and the soccer part of it all too. I mean, this has been a really big soccer week in Austin. You and I were talking about some public art in our last episode. And we had a little bit of a shout out to one of Austin FC's players, who was depicted in the mural. So he, you know, tagged him in the post and he liked it. So that's fun. I was joking with you is that, you know, I just get some more goals. You know, they got a game tomorrow. It'll actually be their first home game in the new stadium, which is, pretty incredible. You know, I think that for the Austin soccer fans, and supporters here, and you know, people aren't, it's just hard to process that, you know, we actually have a team and, you know, we've been watching them on TV and, now we'll actually get to see them in real life, in the stadium. And, that's pretty incredible, but the stadium did open officially with a match a little earlier this week. You know, I think appropriately, it was, you know, the TIFO, so the supporters raised the big mural, the temporary mural. This all ties to all the stuff we're talking about. In the mural, they depicted Crystal Dunn, who is, you know, on the U.S. women's national team. So the U.S. women's national team played a friendly against Nigeria, to christen, the new Q2 stadium. It was an amazing event. Sold out, 20,000 people, 20,500 people in attendance. That's a lot of people. So still getting used to that concept, but got to go and with some friends, and it was pretty amazing. So by all accounts.
I forgot we have Zoom technology. I can share.
Yeah, share screen. You can share some of the pictures. Yeah. There's Jamie, the TIFO.
Captured this. So the mural that they hanged there was christened by Queens, the U.S. Women's National, which is, I thought was pretty clever.
Yeah. There's
Jamie. And
Jason, and Jason, who's been on the podcast.
Oh my gosh. I didn't recognize him. It's been too long. And here's another notable.
Megan Rapinoe and then Crystal Dunn there in the corner too. She's,
very cool. And who is this?
Alex Morgan.
Some good shot. Your seats are pretty close.
Yeah, there was.
Oh, this is a great action shot here.
Yeah, so these aren't my official seats for like when Austin FC plays, got some different ones for this, and it was great. We were all very like we've talked about it before. I've been in the stadium kind of during construction, and I kind of knew whereabouts would be some good spots, but you know hadn't you know completely checked it out yet, and so really really felt fortunate. We had a great time.
Yeah, so, you know, you're familiar with the building a little bit, but, you know, as an architect, I typically walk into a new building and I go, okay, where are the bathrooms? They're probably over there. Being a terribly dorky architect who's always, like, figuring out, you know, where the cores, you know, the plumbing cores and structural.
Well, I mean, and for this is, you know, it's the sight lines to the field. It's, it's the facilities, it's the restrooms, right? But it's also like, you know, in it's Austin. So, I mean, you know, Austin's sort of a music and foodie town a little bit. So a lot of people have been like, where's the food? Like, where's, you know, and the, admittedly, I think that the club has tried to, you know, get some local flavor, some local vendors, you know, kind of involved with it for a stadium experience. And, you know, though some of the prices are kind of exorbitant, but I mean, it's, you know, it is a stadium. So yeah, it's been an interesting sort of discussion I think people are having. And, but by everyone's account, I think that the stadium and the experience was pretty remarkable. And the U.S. Women's National Team players were, you know, they're christening the stadium. We do not have a women's professional team here in town. So an NWSL team, but a lot of these players play for NWSL clubs or have played if they're playing overseas and, you know, for professionally. And one, a lot of them remarked, you know, to the media, you know, so when y'all getting a NWSL team, because we'd love to be here. This is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, I think that's the, you know, I think that'll be the next discussion is, you know, maybe the next big professional team will be a women's soccer team. Hopefully sooner than later.
Yeah. That would be great.
I mean, it, like, fun fact. So I'm on sort of, I've talked about the Austin Soccer Foundation, which is sort of a nonprofit, not a sort of, it is a nonprofit charity, kind of umbrella organization, where we do a lot of things for underserved parts of the community and, work collaboratively with other, charities in town trying to do that. But I've also been asked and have been serving a little bit with, the FC Austin Elite, which is a semi-pro women's soccer team, here in Austin. And a good friend of mine, you know, established the team and, they are kind of, an in-betweener. So they're not a full professional team and they're not amateurs. And they kind of are occupying this kind of interesting space, in sort of a second or, sort of second tier, which is really varied to a certain degree of women's soccer in the US. So you have NWSL, so, you know, full on professional at sort of the top. And then the second tier, they're in that group and it's really kind of a mixed bag of how those clubs are operating and how their seasons operate. But, their big news is, you know, it's a big week of soccer here in Austin. And so the U.S. women opened the stadium on Wednesday. The FC Austin Elite are having their own friendly. They're bringing in an actual professional women's soccer team, but from Mexico. So for a friendly. So they're actually doing that today, tonight. And then tomorrow, the Austin FC take the field at their own stadium for the first time. So it's a kind of a big week of soccer. We're trying to pace ourselves, but it's pretty exciting stuff.
Oh yeah. All at the same time. Well,
I've got my,
are you going to go to the game tonight?
I might be able to go. So I'm not sure. I had planned on it, but, we'll see if I can get up there. It's like I said, pacing myself. So,
right. Like I was saying, I was going to add in there all while emerging from this pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, well, that's
levels are improving. Things are starting to open up. Everyone's got to get a little bit of their own comfort level sorted out for engaging with others and things like that. So, I mean, yeah, speaking of, you know, I think it was a fairly safe event. So just to do one small segue, as a pastime or an outdoor recreation thing, I like to do a little disc golf. And so my first tournament ever. I don't claim to be very good at disc golf, but I get by. It's a very fun activity. it's a good excuse to be outside. And actually, I believe at the professional level, well, let's just say as a sport as a whole, it actually really thrived during the pandemic because it was one of the few things you can do, you know, safely, you know, because it's completely outdoors and you're not standing side by side, you know.
Like foot golf. Yeah, we talked about foot golf before, yeah.
And so so locally, the Flint Institute of Arts, just over around the corner from my house, is part of our Flint Cultural Campus. So we have music venues and the arts and the Automotive Museum. And, all, you know, it's all this nice cluster, this campus. It's pretty in a planetarium. I mean, we're really lucky with all these great venues. And so the local disc golf club, Flint Town Flyers, got together with the Flint Institute of Arts for a fundraiser. And so as a charitable event, I thought, well, you know, I don't, there's no pressure to you know, win.
To perform, right? Or,
yes. So I did it all for the cause. And I actually finished 2 under par. So it's played similar to golf, you know, ball golf or whatever you want to, you know, what most people call golf. And so it's 18 holes or 18 baskets, pars are like 3 and 4, you know. And so I finished 2 under par. And you get a kind of commemorative frisbee disc. So if you can see,
nice.
That is, so it's got a cool rainbow stamp, which I thought was neat, and a nice color.
And nice little sketch of the building there.
That's the Flint Institute of Arts. Yep. So the recognizable facade, if you were ever in town, and then of course a disc in a basket. So hopefully I don't throw this one into the river, which I have.
I don't
done.
Think you're supposed to play with the commemorative ones, but that's
well,
just,
you know, yeah. Some people, you know,
okay.
Give it a try. You gotta find out how it flies. So anyway, so I did that last weekend as a as a thing, it, you know, and it was safe. We're all vaccinated, so it all worked out very well. And actually, that's where Danielle is right now. She's taking a pottery class, a clay class.
Oh,
so
that's one. I think that's one art class that I have always told myself I should take. Is I did a little bit of pottery in high school, but not terribly successfully. I don't know if it was, I don't know what it was, but it's always sort of intrigued me. I think you know that mm-hmm. you know, spinning and all that, throwing pots and mm-hmm. you know the I think that's. Sculpture's always sort of intrigued me. So, and I think that's kind of where we're going to talk about some sketches today is sort of in this sculpture vein.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me pop this up real quick on our screen. 'Cause at the same time we were multitasking, watching some of our conference sessions yesterday. I took a picture of a sketch of mine and sent it to Jamie. So what we're working on is, I think we mentioned this last week, is that we decided to collaborate in the summer of design, and we're going to work on this art installation, well, architectural installation that is being put on in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Part of there's a local community art center right there in downtown Ann Arbor. That wanted to activate the alleyways in between, the main streets of downtown Ann Arbor. And so I sent a sketch over to Jamie via photograph, since we are remote, remote collaboration. And Jamie sent me this back with a couple of views and then posted this to Instagram so that we can have a chat about it today. And so Should I, you want me to show some of mine first?
Or yeah. Yeah. Show some of yours, because I think that, you know, yours are a lot looser. Because I think it's sort of forming an idea, and you know, what's been fun about it is you send me the sketches and then send me little sort of blurby thoughts, of what you were thinking about. And, you know, and I think it was enough to kind of get the conversation going and really got me thinking about it. And then, like you said, when you sent the one while we were both in this session yesterday, it really kind of prompted me to do a sort of our own little call and response in the form of a sketch.
Yeah. And yeah, so here's my book. And let's see, you know, if you were to look at an alley, right? So if you see these rectangles represent, you know, two buildings or the space between two buildings. And there's only one, well, there's two, I guess, two criteria for this whole competition is the design that you create, and if you get selected, has to be constructible with the $10,000 budget is what they've allocated. And then the other is that the alleyways in this case are still being, are still or needed to be accessed to the backside of the buildings. So not just by pedestrian, but I think vehicular traffic. So you need to kind of, your installation has to kind of keep clear a certain tunnel of space between the buildings. But I think with a little creative license, you know, you can kind of, you know, work around that. So the alleyway, you know, looking at it in a sort of plan view, right? You know, you have the space between two buildings. And you know, recently I've been kind of interested in this sort of idea of compressing and expanding spaces in some of the projects for my clients I'm working on. You know, it's a little bit of going back to, I mean, Frank Lloyd Wright was very well known for doing that and sort of shaping the movement through a building and revealing, especially in his houses. So I sent over Jamie the bunch of these scribbles. And the one idea I think early on is this idea of like a ripple or some sort of a movement, right, in this design installation.
And I'm drawing people through, you know, through and into some kind of interaction with the space.
Yeah.
I think that was some of the early stuff. And then, you know, that, you know, has changed a little bit, but the ripple was that first idea for sure.
Yeah, trying to visualize or build in three dimensions what a sort of ripple effect could be. So some of the ideas it's about like, you know, what would make somebody want to go from one end of the alley to the other, right? You know, what would be attractive to not just sort of stand at the end of the alley and view in, right? That I think is one angle that you could take on a installation like this. But I'm interested in trying to pull people through the space so that you're within the alley and not just standing on the formal street sidewalk, kind of looking in. And so,
kind of inhabiting the art is sort of was something you'd mentioned to early on. Yeah.
Yeah. And then again, I guess, you know, we haven't really talked about it a ton yet, but having read some Eric Owen Moss books recently this past spring, he had, you know, you could see in his early work how he is sort of interested in not just occupying his building, but occupying areas like the structural components of his buildings and accentuating this sort of ability to be surrounded by the, you know, all of the parts of the building. So yeah, occupying the installation as well. And so that led me to think about encouraging the interaction with the installation. So Jamie kind of coined it as like a kind of steampunk-esque connection or interaction with the device. So like, I was thinking like, if there was, you know, so two things, right? Could there be some kind of mural of our own that we would create that could either flank the alley or, you know, the side of the building facing into the alley, but also have some sort of three-dimensional visibility from above too, right? So that, you know, the upper floors of these buildings got to enjoy some of this as well. So there's a lot of constraints or asks that I'm putting into this thing. But what if we could, instead of painting a mural on the wall, if we could print or, you know, paint a mural onto some kind of stretchy fabric, a tent like, you know, fabric or something that had some flexibility. And then if the viewer or somebody, you know, walking up to this sort of kinetic mural could turn a crank or a wheel that sort of pushes and pulls this fabric, stretches it out or into the alley, creating that kind of 3D ripple effect, right? So at different points, the rectangular, you know, mural kind of was pushing in and out, right? Depending on how they were turning some kind of crank. So that's all the initial, like, let's put it all in there.
Yeah,
and
no,
edit,
this is
edit well, it yeah. back, baby.
Well, and what was funny was that, you know, sort of like you said, it you know, when you started to talk about the kinetic aspects and sort of turning a winch or something like that, I immediately sort of started to think about, you know, how cool that object, you know, could be designed, you know, just the actual thing that you touch. So that becomes a piece of art in and of itself and almost has sort of maybe a steampunk kind mm-hmm. of, you know, where it, because you want it to be something that somebody's drawn to, you know, in this kind of urban environment. But at the same time was it, you know, taking it back to what we talked about when we first started this, you know, this, episode was, you know, the TIFO, the supporter led, interactive art piece, is the one that we just showed on the screen a little while ago, from the U.S. Women's National Team that the American Outlaws, their supporters group, created. That's only up for a couple minutes, and it's raised on winches, hand pulled winches, by the fans that are in the stands, and it made me think is like, okay, yeah, and it sort of ripples, and it's on this fabric, and it's a lot of how you were describing, you know, something could be in this space, you know, not necessarily for the same effect. I think the way that you're sort of trying to craft and move an object in space is something that I think we're both sort of like, what does that need to be? You know, what are the vantage points that, you know, an observer can really kind of experience it? You know, in comparing your sketch and mine, since I'd seen yours and sort of seen that plan prompt of here's the alley, here's the two walls, you know, here, how do we move through this space? There's some, iterations of that in the sketch that I did as well, where I'm trying to think about how much is attached to a wall, mm-hmm. how does the space get compressed, or how does somebody move through it? You know, what are the nodes within that space? And then I kind of flipped into perspective and tried to you know, position whatever the art was, this fabric installation, you know, kind of higher up in the space so that, you know, could be maybe viewed from above or viewed from a pedestrian level. But as I'm doing those sketches, I'm like, what, there's still something, from a mechanics of this that I was sort of struggling with. And then it hit me was it's like a flip book, you know, kind of dumbing it back down is it's a flip book. You know, kind of concept where the image that's revealed, or the art, you know, the is both about the vantage point, but it, you know, the observer, but also the activity that's, you know, that somebody's, you know, the energy that somebody's kind of putting into it, and that, you know, the combination of all those things in a space, that's really kind of a way that you're describing all of these, you know, all of these things in the design bucket, you know, all these design moves. And so I started doodling on kind of, you know, what's a flip book, and, you know, how, you know, what does it traditionally look like, you know, and kind of the sort of derivative forms of it, kind of the, you know, motion pictures, you know, camera angles. You know, we talk a lot about TV shows and movies. You know, we are going to get to talking about, you know, I've teased it out in our Twitter feed about, you know, the Montreal Metro architectural connections to the Loki set. But I think it's this sort of, you know, how does the moving picture, this kinetic sculpture, this mural, this fabric, how can it occupy this space? How can it be designed in a way that creates this ripple effect that you're talking about? So it tried to explore it, you know, kind of from two different mental angles for myself of literally where does it occupy the space, but then sort of what is it and why is it? Sometimes I have to do those kind of doodles, you know, to kind of explain the concept to myself.
Yeah. No, and it's actually really exciting to see your, you know, I kind of hit you on two different days with my very loose sketches, and it was nice to see your take on how to interpret the ideas and add in your own ideas and return, because it's not, some of it is not anything like I was envisioning at all, but also it adds to it, and sort of, you know, we can merge the ideas into a formal solution. Cause I think when you try and attempt, you know, this is a competition. So, you know, you're trying to win one of four or five spots in order to get your design built. And so whoever, you know, however many people apply to this, you have to have a compelling design, something that's buildable, but I think also answer the why, right? You're sometimes maybe causing your own question. You're creating your design problem, and then you're also answering it with the why,
and trying to make it compelling, you know, in that. Yeah. And I think it goes back to what you've said, you know, to me before, is that, when you've looked at competition entries, I mean, you've run a competition, I've run a competition before, you know, from the, mm-hmm. from the administrator side of things, and looking at all those kind of entries kind of coming in, and then just, you know, looking at them in general as an architect, as a designer, we've done that and sort of, you know, critiqued work and tried to learn from it. But the ones that are the most compelling are, as you say, I mean, it's answering the why, but doing it with a real simplicity of the graphic. So the simplicity of that sketch that really explains and cuts to the one or two or three moves that you're trying to illustrate by your concept, your overall concept. And so that it's almost without words, it is compelling. And somebody wants mm-hmm. to see it wants to see it realized, because I mean, like you say, you of course you want to win. You know, that's the beauty of kind of coming up with some of these things, is we want to see them in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so, you know, we have what till the 13th, I think, 13th or 14th of July to come up with. We need one. Here's our target, right? We need one 24x36 PDF board, which would have been in traditional competitions a physical printed, you know, panel, 2 foot by 3 foot rectangle, if anybody's not familiar with how we typically, you know, sort of present these things.
How inches to feet work? Is that what you were describing there?
What's that?
the
competition panel
conversion
itself.
How the conversion works.
12,
yeah, there are 12 inches in a foot. Yes.
No, like if you know, how do, I don't think a lot of people outside of architecture are familiar with like how we present competition entries, right? You know,
right.
It's not usually like a series of slides like a PowerPoint. It's usually like a formatted large, you know, sheet of paper mounted to foam core. But in this case, it's a digital PDF. So, you know, it's going to be a digital submission, but we have to compose it and sort of walk through the idea. And we have to get this done by, you know, July 13. And then, so when some of our next steps will be to do some more detailed design work, but
we're going to do this as some sort of recurring theme of the podcast. So this is sort of our first, storyline, you know, for season three.
Yeah. And so this is our design meeting.
Yeah. This is the design meeting that you all get to listen to us describe.
But sometimes, you know, like I should probably make the screen a little larger, but you know, this sketch is not necessarily related, right, as part of the competition, but I was just loosely or abstractly pushing and pulling sort of arcs. And I think the arcs are just in general exploring an idea of smooth movement, right? And then when you sent me this sketch, the sketches that you have here, like say the upper left corner of the book, you have this sort of hanging flip book from above, which I thought was really interesting because it's out of the way, but it's also kind of like a kinetic piece of sculpture there, you know, that is changing imagery. But then I was thinking of something like this. So this would be like a top-down view, and then this would be sort of a crude axon, right?
Let's right.
Do that. But, you know, what if there was, like gears, you could connect these sort of, I don't want to call them lampshades, but, you know, what a lampshade looks like, a round cylinder that maybe had an image on it, or maybe if, you know, once spinning, it created an image, a moving image, but you had different size cylinders down the alley that you turn a crank on one end and it started this cascade of spinning cylinders that could also then be turned from the other end. And maybe, you know, and so that would require like, you know, thinking about like a bicycle set of gears, right? You have the front sprocket and the wheel sprockets. And you can change your speeds by the gears, and then you just connect these with some kind of chain or drive mechanism. I'm also trying to think about the practical. How do you make this thing move, under $10,000?
Well, and protect it too, so that it, I mean, because these are going to be up for a little bit, and that's the thing is, I think. It's you're building a temporary sculpture, but it's semi-permanent and exposed to the elements. So, yeah. You know, all those things end up kind of factoring in. But, you know, kind of as you're, I think, you know, kind of dipping away from the mechanics of it, I like the idea of multiple objects, though. Sort of multiple points within that space, because it allows us to occupy a couple different spaces and then create that sense of movement, as opposed to movement in an object. It's sort of movement between objects. And I'm even thinking that maybe it doesn't necessarily be, using your sort of drum example of three drums and kind of moving between these forms, what if it's less about a picture and it's more about a word or a statement? Mm. And you know, there's a story being told and you're sort of interacting with it within that space. It makes me think of like Jenny Holzer's work, you know, where it's, you know, she works in sort of a digital realm, you know, predominantly with ticker tape billboards as one of the veins of her work. But there's sort of statements that are provocative in a sense where it's the super graphic, but it's text. It's a font. It's a, mm-hmm. the font becomes kind of a graphic in and of itself, and you can kind of read it that way. But then there are underlying meanings within it, which we haven't necessarily explored about where this piece lives. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's, and it might be, that might not necessarily be applicable in this particular case, but oftentimes that sort of historic research of about a place, the stories about a place can really inform kind of a response to that place. And so I think that that's something that maybe we'll, you know, consider and see if that factors into some of the imagery that we maybe work within this scheme.
Yeah, I think that actually is and again, something I hadn't thought about is a sort of a poem or a story that was separated into parts, which might actually encourage people to go from point A to B to get the whole story, right? In order to finish the complete thought, they would have to get through all the stations, so to speak.
Well, and you know how I feel about kind of, you know, art with stories. I mean, yeah. the Kraken, you know, yeah. was a sculpture with, you know, a short story attached to it. But when you started to talk about moving through the space and really wanting to kind of create this ripple of activity, it made me really think about, you know, a set of images that would sort of, you know, generate movement. And so that was the flip book, kind of, you know, the first place I went. But now as we're talking about it, I'm wondering if, you know, a poem or something like that could really kind of weave its way through this space. That could be really, you know, pretty special.
Yeah. And I actually was also going to ask or throw in there, and you got to it already, but understanding the sense of place, like the historic aspects, or, you know, what does the site itself give you? Because, you know, what we hadn't really talked about yet, you know, aside from, you know, we talked about these design implementations, but we hadn't really talked about the importance of the place that it's going into.
Right.
You know, the alleyways, Ann Arbor, downtown, you know, what is it about that place that makes this connect and special? And so, and which I hadn't really been thinking about. And I think the idea of tying it in with some sort of story, written word, you know, text-based connection, I think that could be a really cool, I think, you know, because if you miss that, I think then you miss a big part of the intent of the competition, is in my opinion. Some other designers, architects may not, you know, value that as, or, you know, as much of a priority, but I think there's always a strength in connection to place in anything that you design, right? You know, the purpose, a purpose.
Absolutely. To design. Absolutely. Okay. Well, and, you know, I'm glad that we've been able to have kind of this initial design discussion. I know that this exchange kind of happened, as we were, looking at the, you know, the first day of the A21. So I think we'll probably leave this one here and then pick up in the next episode about some of those A21 experiences. And when we say A21, it's the AI National Convention. They're doing it virtually this year and breaking it out over several days. Usually it's a multi-day conference somewhere in the U.S. And so this year it got planned virtually. And so the first day was yesterday. But we've participated in many of them, and this one was certainly unique. So we'll maybe leave it there and pick up on that in the next episode with some other sketches and thoughts that we've had here recently.
Sounds good. Thanks. Thank you for listening. We both hope that you enjoyed this episode of Coffee Sketch Podcast. Our theme music is provided by my brother, who goes by at Cold Fashioned on Instagram and Twitter. Our podcast is hosted at coffeesketch.buzzsprout.com. Find more show notes and information from this episode. And finally, if you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes and share us with your friends. Thank you.